This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here at the People Speak, we believe that when you do speak, and the people do, quite often on this show, we make a difference. Tonight we have some wonderful guests with us, a gentleman from Afghanistan by the name of Ramin Sabarzadeh. I hope we have Ramin with us. We're having a little bit of trouble with the connection. And a young lady here in the West Coast by the name of Fatma Mujahideed. And Fatma, can you tell me a little bit about how you came to this country? You have an interesting story. I know you were born here in the States in Virginia, but then shortly after that, you ended up going back after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan?
First of all, I wanted to say thank you, Basma, for having us on the show. And we, as Afghans for Peace, feel honored to be on your show and speak. Yes, I was born in the States when my father got a scholarship to go to engineering school here. And I was maybe 4 or 5 when we moved to Pakistan. It was a year after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And from the age of 5 till 21, I grew up in Peshawar, the refugee town in Pakistan, where my family spent, you know, most of their time and resources helping the refugees and also resisting the Soviet occupation. And then in 1995, I moved back. So I just kind of gave my age away.
No, there you go. That's all right. I don't think you have anything to worry about yet, sweetheart. Now, when you moved back, now, did you move back with your family or did you move back alone or how did that work out?
Yes, basically, in 1992, everybody was optimistic just like they were after September 11, because the current Soviet-backed regime had collapsed and the Afghans had taken over. And I went there, I moved there with my family with very idealistic dreams of, you know, rebuilding Afghanistan back then in 1992. And on the 26th day of my life in Afghanistan is when the Civil War broke out, when Gulbuddin Hekmatyar from his Bismami indiscriminately shelled the entire city of Kabul. Up until that point, most of the war had been outside of Kabul in the rural areas of Afghanistan. But on that day and onwards, the war came to Kabul city. So we still have many buildings that have big holes in them from that point in history onwards. So after 1992, after the Civil War broke out, after a couple of years after that, you know, we basically decided that, okay, it's time to give ourselves a break and go somewhere and try to live a peaceful existence there. And then when 9/11 happened, when my family found the opportunity to go back, they went back. So my family is currently inside Afghanistan.
I see. Now, I'm going to assume that Ramin is not, we were not able to connect with Ramin. Ramin, are you on in the queue with us? Hello, Ramin? Hi.
But Ramin is saying that he can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you'd be translating for. Can you tell me where in Afghanistan Ramin resides?
Ramin John, سوال دارم که در کجای افغانستان زندگی میکنین.
در قدم اول اجازه بکنید که من سلام های خود خدمت تمام شنونده های عزیز تقدیم بکنم.
Ramin John would first like to send his greetings to all the listeners and the host of the show.
Thank you. I'm sure that
he's saying hello to the host of the show.
Thank you, Ramin. It's my pleasure having you on. Uh-huh. I'd like to ask, Ramin, how long the occupation of Afghanistan, both the Russian occupation and the American occupation, has gone on?
Ramin Jan, شما سوال دارن که چقدر دیر جنگ روسیه در افغانستان بود و چقدر دیر جنگ افغانستان در افغانستان جنگ ببخشید جنگ آمریکا در افغانستان بود.
تشکر از هدف از اینا از مدتش باشم تقریبا متاسفم افغانستان یک دوره 10 ساله تجاوز روس در افغانستان سپری کرد.
Vale, he's saying that as far as the occupations in Afghanistan, the Russian occupation went on for 10 years. Well, then you call him for Sanka then.
And now
it's been almost 10 years that the military invasion occupation through of the U.S. and NATO forces have taken place in Afghanistan. It's almost 10 years for that one as well.
So you've got almost a 20-year occupation.
Ramin Jan, the سوال اول که بود که در کجا افغانستان نباشین. Ramin Jan, the question about where you live in Afghanistan.
تشکر. ما در شهر مزار شریف در ولایت بلخ زندگی میکنم.
Ramin Jan lives in the city of Mazar Sharif in the province of Balkh, which is in northern Afghanistan.
باید اضافه بکنیم که شهر مزار شریف یکی از ولایات آرام و با امنیت 3 سال پیش بود.
He would like to say that up until a few years ago, the city of Mazar in the province of Balkh was one of the more peaceful and calm areas. Unfortunately, in the last few years, due to increased war and Taliban activities, the situation in the area has deteriorated.
May I ask you, may I ask Ramin, what are the primary differences between the Russian occupation and the American occupation of Afghanistan?
Yes, Basma, I'll ask him. I think he wants to explain the situation in Mazar right now. Do you want me to continue?
Sure, we could do that.
Go ahead, Ramin Jan. Ramin Jan, میتونم که یک جمله تنها خلاص کنم با ترجمانی میکنم. بگن که در مزار گفتیم که چند سال آخر کارات خراب شد.
خیلی خوب است. من میخواستم بگم که متاسفانه با نفوس طالبا در بعد از ولسوالی های ولایت بلخ
Ramin is saying that unfortunately even in northern Afghanistan, which is the province of Balkh, the population of the Taliban has increased.
So it's not better.
متاسفانه دیگر ولایت بلخ و مزار شریف از جمله ولایات با امن به حساب یعنی امنیت در اینجا از 3 سال به طرف خرابتر شده.
So in the last 3 years the province of Balkh is not considered a peaceful province anymore.
Okay.
در قسمت سوال دیگری که اینا گفتن که فرق بین تجاوز روسیه و امریکا چی است باید بگویم که
Ramin would now like to explain the difference between the Soviet and the U.S. occupation.
Thank you.
اما
در قدم اول میخوام بگم که بسیار مشکل است که بین دو حادثه بعد آدم فرقایش بگه چون هر دیش بر است.
First, he would like to say it's very difficult to tell the differences between two very bad situations. Both the occupations were very bad situations. Go ahead, Roman John.
ولی به نظر من تفاوت های هم وجود داره که حالا من میشد به اون تفاوت ها اشاره بکنیم.
Regardless if you guys want him to say the differences, there were some differences. Go ahead, Ramin Jan.
در زمان روس افغانستان یک اردوی قوی بسیار منظم داشت.
During the Soviet time, the Afghan army was very organized and very strong.
And now,
but today the Afghan army is a very weak army.
And what does Ramin mean?
I think he's still answering the question. Would you like me to? Sorry. Would you like him to answer more about the same question, or would you like to ask a different question?
Well, what I'd like to know is, as far as the Afghan military being weakened, this is a great concern for your country, I would imagine, if you have a weak military. And wasn't part of the American occupation to help to reinforce a stronger military?
من یه سوال دارم که وقتی که اردوی ملی افغانستان خیلی ضعیف است، آیا امریکا از گول امریکا و نیتو می نبود که اردوی ملی افغانستان قوی بسازه؟
ببخشید، من سوال جز آخر سوال رو گرفته نکنستم.
که سوال میکنن که آیا وقتی شما میگین اردوی ملی افغانستان ضعیف است، آیا یکی از دلایلی که امریکا ادامه کنه که امی نبود که اردوی ملی افغانستان قوی میخواد بسازه؟
بله، دقیقا این واقعه نه که از ضعفای از این ریژیم است میشه شما بگوین، و مهمتر از این که سالانه 24% از اساکر اردوی ملی از اردوی افغانستان فرار میکنن.
Yes, Romin is saying that is one of the concerns about this regime is that they claim that, you know, they're empowering the Afghan army, but in reality, 20% or more of the Afghan National Army leave, abandons their position in the army per year, 20% or more.
I would like to ask Ramin this question. Ramin, I would like to ask you, if you were to pick the top three issues that you have with the American occupation, can you tell me what they are?
Ramin, سوالی که باز مجان دارن ایست که اگه سی موضوع مهمترین پیشتان که بود براجع به امی قوای ناتو در افغانستان است. سی موضوع مهمترین و که هست این موضوع کدام سی موضوع مهم است پیش شما؟
فاطمه جان بیشتر من مذرت میخوایم که آواز شما شفاف برای من ندارم جز آخرش باز است شما من نتونستیم بگیرم.
Okay. We're having some difficulty. He can't hear me very well, so I have to repeat the question. Ramin جان، باسما جان سوال دارن که اگه سه موضوع مهمترین برای جب امی قوای ناتو که در افغانستان است به شما کدام سه موضوع مهم است؟
هدفشان از سه موضوع مهمی که جامعه جهانی در افغانستان ضعفشان بوده درست است؟
هدفشان از سه موضوع مهم راجع به ناتو و قوای امریکا است که در افغانستان اگه سه مشکل مهمترین که هست یا سه موضوع
مهم من گرفتم من فکر میکنم که سه موضوع بسیار کلانه که به اصطلاح جامعه جهانی در افغانستان متقبل شد و این را من سه اشتباهی بسیار کلان میدانم میشه که مثلا به سه موضوع اشاره بکنم.
Yes, Ramin is saying that he will in detail give answers on three issues that are directly affected the occupation. بفرمایید نامین جان.
و این سه موضوع واقعا یک اشتباه یعنی سه اشتباه بسیار کلام نیروهای ناتو در افغانستان بوده. یعنی باید از این سه موضوع مهم است سه اشتباه بسیار کلام نیروهای ناتو در افغانستان را از یاد
نمی‌دهیم. I mean, it's saying that the three most important issues are not only three most important issues, they're also the three biggest mistakes of the NATO and U.S. military in Afghanistan. They're three big mistakes, not just issues.
And they are?
در قدم اول اولین اشتباه جامعه جهانی و نیروهای ناتو بود که جنگسالارا را و کسایی که دستشان به خون و مردم افغانستان آغشته بود در قدرت سهم دادند.
The first mistake of the international military presence and international community, NATO, US, whatever you want to call them, the first mistake, the biggest mistake was that they put the same warlords and criminals in positions of power that have shed the blood of the Afghan people. That was the first and biggest mistake, is to put those same people back in positions of power.
So instead of removing the Taliban, they empowered
them. Taliban. Warlords and Taliban are different groups of people.
Thank you for that clarification.
Okay, I know a lot of Westerners are get confused because there's so many different factions in Afghanistan. We understand that the warlords are people that were engaged in war before the Taliban took over in 1996. So there was groups such as some groups labeled themselves as Mujahideen. Some were actually during the communist era. Both from both eras, from the Soviet era and the Mujahideen era, there are groups and individuals and political parties that have engaged in massive war crimes. And it's well documented by Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and everybody knows about this. But regardless, these people were put back, when the new Afghan government was built, they were put back in positions of power. They were rewarded. Instead of punished, they were rewarded. They were made governors and ministers in the Afghan government, and they're still there. And in fact, not too long ago, a law was passed in the Afghan government where these people have general amnesty now, like they cannot be prosecuted. So this is a big issue. How can we have a government? You know, how can we have any kind of stability when we have well-known war criminals as part of our government? It's like putting the Pinochets and the Hitlers in your government. Who would accept that?
Exactly.
So, go ahead, Ramin-Jan.
And may I ask you, Fatma?
Can I let Ramin answer the second and third one? I'm sorry.
Okay, sure.
Ramin-Jan, Nazoy Don Bogor.
Sorry, I'm not sure what he's saying, so it's go right ahead.
I was translating. His first point was that the biggest mistake the international community made was to put the warlords in the Afghan government. Ramin-Jan, Nazoy Don Bogor.
Nazoy Don is that Jamil Jahani, متاسفانه در قسمت اشتغال زایی یا employment برای مردم افغانستان ناکام بودن. قطعا ناکام بودن.
نفهمیدم امور اثر بگوین که چی؟ نفهمیدم employment گفتین؟
اشتغال دوم یا موضوع دوم این بود که جامعه جهانی در قسمت اشتغال زایی یا بدیل های اقتصادی یا employment نگین یا income generation نگین برای مردم افغانستان
I mean, the second biggest mistake is that the international community has failed at providing sustainable economic opportunities for the average Afghan, for ordinary Afghans. There is no economic stability. There is no economic opportunity. So I can give more detail on that issue, the whole issue.
اجازه بکن که ما در این قسمت زیادتر روشنی بندازم. اگر وقت باشم از چند دقیقه میخوام به محور این موضوع بپیچم.
Ramin Jan would like permission to elaborate on this economic issue a little bit more if you allow, Basma Jan. Do we have time to elaborate more on this number two issue?
Yes, I'm sorry. There's a little bit of lag from when he speaks, so.
Yes, please
do.
Okay. Yes, Ramin Jan, میتونین به این موضوع ادامه بتین، تشریح بتین.
در زمان طالبان اکثر مردمان در دهات و قریه‌جات پول برای فامیلایشان از طریق کوکنار به دست می آوردن، از طریق پشت کوکنار به دست می آوردن.
از طریق پشت چی؟ نفهمیدم.
پشت کوکنار، اوپیوم.
Oh, okay. During the Taliban time, most many families were able to sustain themselves through growing opium.
And now?
زمانی که جامعه جهانی در افغانستان آمد.
When the international community came inside Afghanistan.
از یک طرف کشت کوکنار که مثلا از جمله منابع آمدنی مهم افغانستان بود و قطع شد.
On one hand, the international community banned the growth of opium, which was the means of sustenance for these poor farmer
families.
On the other hand, the international community did not provide another sustainable means of sustenance for the poor people.
در این شرایط اکثر مردم از نظر اقتصادی در وضعیت بسیار بد قرار گرفتند.
Due to reasons like this, the ordinary people are facing very dire economic situations.
چون اونا دیگه نمیتونستن که نه گندم و جم و جواری کشت بکنن.
اثر بکنین نفهمیدم.
چون در این زمان وقتی که کوکنار کش نمیکردن یا به اصطلاح مو کوکنار کش نمیکردن، در این زمان گندم و جم و جواری یعنی دیگه چیزا هم کش کرده نمیتونستن.
چرا نمیتونستن؟
یعنی بگیم کوکنار گندم و جم و جواری هم کش کرده نمیتونستن چون با قیمت بسیار ارزان این مواد از کشورهای همسایه به داخل افغانستان وارد میشه.
So he was saying, on the other hand, the farmers could not sustain themselves from growing wheat and other forms of grain because the neighbor countries such as Pakistan we have neighbor countries that also grow these crops, and they were flooding the Afghan market with their crops at a low price. So the farmers were basically left with no alternative. Like, they can't grow opium. But then when they tried growing wheat, there was no system in place to ensure that they can sell that wheat and sustain themselves because neighbor countries were selling at a lower price, similar to NAFTA and, you know, similar to what happened in Mexico and the United States sending corn there. So,
Fatma, in an effort to get more information out, perhaps I can ask you a few questions. We're coming down to the half of the hour, and I really would like to get a little bit more about the Afghan for Peace program that you are involved with.
Hello.
Did we lose him? We seem to be having, we're having some difficulty here with this. As I said, can you tell us a little bit about Afghan for Peace and how they are going about
trying to work with the
government?
I will give an example of a third issue. I would say complete lawlessness and lack of accountability. That there is no system of law or accountability in Afghanistan. Anybody with power and money can do whatever they want. So when you have a system like that, that's not really a democracy. So that's an issue that I would. But back to Afghans for Peace. Afghans for Peace is basically a completely grassroots movement. It is comprised of students, community activists, people that have been involved in anti-war organizing for a long time. And a lot of us, myself personally, I've been involved in anti-war organizing immediately since 9/11. And it's just really frustrating.
Are we going to go on break? Let's go on break.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us. But for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to earthshare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine having banks and credit that serve the community, solvent and free of Wall Street corruption, that create strong local economy and job growth? Banks that put profits right back into the local business and economy, not into far-off foreign investments or high-risk and exotic finance schemes of the super-rich.
Yes, we can.
Can you imagine eliminating income tax, ensuring economic stability, increasing social programs, and improving the standard of living for all Americans while paying off the federal debt?
Yes, we can.
That's right. It's all possible.
Yes.
Can you join us in working towards a solution utilizing principles suggested by our founding fathers through united action and strategies outlined in articles, blogs, and wiki spaces where you can share and collaborate? Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, and help us make America's money and future of, by, and for the people once again. Can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Caution, if you are prone to being disturbed by real truth and real solutions, please continue to consult with your qualified Wall Street cheerleader economist on network television. Side effects for not visiting webofdebt.com include drowsiness, loss of job, loss of control of national finance, loss of country, followed by panic attacks and rude awakenings.
Hello, everybody. This is Vasna from the People Speak Radio. We have with us tonight Fatma Mujadidid from Afghans for Peace. Afghans for Peace is a group that is working to help support and encourage peaceful resolution to the occupation of Afghanistan. Hi, Fatma, how are you?
Hi, Basma. Thanks for having us back. So I was explaining what Afghans for Peace is. So we're completely grassroots. A lot of us have been involved in resisting this war and occupation for some time now, but we all came together right after when Obama announced the 30,000 troop surge is when we came together. So I would say November of 2009, that's when we all kind of found each other on Facebook and decided to form a group. And instead of working with non-Afghan groups organizing, only instead of using that as a means, we thought, why not have our own Afghan-based peace movement, which hasn't really happened yet. So this is, I think this might be, I don't want to, you know, assume, but I'm thinking we might be the only organization out there that's Afghan based and led and that's focusing on ending this occupation through peaceful means. So if there are other groups who would love to know of them and meet with them and collaborate with them, but so far, like, we're pretty much the only one that I know of. It's very hard for an Afghan to do this because in general the Afghanistan war is sold to the public, to the worldwide public, as the good war, the just war. So even within the Afghan community, it's very difficult to speak against this war because as soon as you do, you're automatically assumed to be pro-Taliban or pro, you know, whatever, like something that we're not. We're simply against war and occupation and whoever commits atrocities and oppresses the people, we stand against that through peaceful, nonviolent means.
Fatma, may I ask you, are there repercussions for family members or anything that could come about from any of the work that the Afghans for Peace does?
Personally, for me, I don't think so. I mean, I would think more repercussions will happen for us here. We've already experienced some FBI repression. One of our members was approached by the FBI not too long ago, right after the Minneapolis activists got subpoenaed. It was shortly after that one of our members got a call, approached actually as well. So, but inside Afghanistan, I almost feel like there's a little bit more freedom to speak against the government than there is here, unfortunately. It's ironic. So
probably because it's more popular. Or it's getting pretty popular here, too, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. When I asked Ramin, for instance, our Afghan Circus member in Sarabas, and Ramin, I'm like, aren't you worried about safety for you and your family? And he's like, you know, his father-in-law has a radio station. Like, it's a lot of Afghans, they do have blogs, they do have, they do put publications out, and people openly speak against the government. What they don't do as often is openly speak against the occupation. I think there's definitely more difficulty there. A lot of the Afghan media outlets, from what I understand, are kind of controlled by the NATO forces. Like, they're not allowed to speak too much against it. But they can openly criticize Afghan government. There's a lot of open criticism of our own government there.
That because due to the American interests or to the Afghan interests?
You know, I'm not quite sure where that pressure comes from, but from what I understand, like, I've heard that they even get paid by NATO, so I don't know. I'm not there, so I can't really, I don't like to speculate, but that's what I hear, that's the reason why they don't say much. And, like, for instance, like, as of late, the whole fuel issue with Iran, like, it's just so blown out of proportion. We're not supporting the things that Iran does that, you know, are bad for Afghan people, but that there's so much focus on that in the Afghan media, and there's, like, nothing compared to that on the NATO atrocities. So, and NATO is killing far more Afghans than Iran ever has or will.
And America invaded Afghanistan under the guise of getting bin Laden. Obviously, that hasn't worked. Do you think that anything else has been successful in Afghan since this all came about?
Well, it's hard to say. I would say that, no, it hasn't been a success, that it's been a failure. People like to point out to the major cities like Kabul. Well, Kabul is a bubble, and Kabul is not the majority of Afghanistan. Even during the Soviet war, Kabul did well. You know, it was the capital. And so during the U.S. NATO occupation, Kabul might do relatively well. But the majority of people in Afghanistan are rural, and they live in the countryside, which is like more than 90% of the country. And if you go to the rural areas, it's not better. If anything, in certain places, it's a lot worse. If you go to the south of Afghanistan, it's terrible, because that's where, actually in the south, in Helmand and Kandahar, where most of the fighting takes place, they did a study, and 92% of the people there had never even heard of 9/11. So there's a lot of problems like that. You know, so many misconceptions, right, as to who are we fighting and why are we fighting them. The other issue I'd like to bring is that the Red Cross did a study recently, and they said the situation in Afghanistan is worse than it's been in the last 30 years. It's worse than it's ever been. So when Red Cross comes out with a report like that, I think it's pretty serious. For instance, in Afghanistan, the average life expectancy is only 44 years. As you saw in our PSA video, we highlighted those points. The average life expectancy of an Afghan is 44 years, right? We have the second highest infant mortality rate and third highest maternal mortality rate. So it's like, I mean,
Has this increased since the occupation, or do you think it's a direct result of the occupation, or were these numbers?
It has gotten worse. Some studies that it has gotten worse. Yes, it hasn't gotten better. It's gotten worse, especially when Red Cross came out and said it's become, like, the Red Cross report is very recent. And it's saying that it's worse now than it ever was in the last 30 years. So what does that tell you? That, yes, it's gotten worse. So, you know.
Okay. We have a couple of questions from some of our listeners. Mike in California would like to know, I understand you work at Democracy Now! Is that show giving the...
I don't work there anymore. No, I worked there after 9/11. That was in 2000, between 2002 and 2003 is when I worked there.
Okay. And do you think that Democracy Now! Gives a full view of what's going on in Afghanistan? He wants to...
Don't put me in that position. I would say they do better than mainstream American media, but I do feel that they need to do more. And they need to put more Afghans on the air. I respect Chomsky, and I admire him, and I respect people like Howard Zinn. He passed away. I have lots of admiration for him. But there's a lot of times where they put certain, like, icons versus, like, ordinary voices of ordinary Afghans. But that's just, you know. But still, I would say they do a better coverage, absolutely better coverage than mainstream American media.
Carol in Iowa wants to know, supporters of America's presence in Afghanistan seem to think this will bring freedom to the women there. Do you think this is true?
No. The situation for women has not improved. Okay, again, Kabul is a bubble. When we have the third highest in maternal mortality rate in the world, what does that tell you? Last year, 103 Afghan women set themselves on fire. Self-immolation, suicide. If things were better, why would they be doing this? No,
so
I don't
think
the first
test. So you think this has to do more with the relationship to the poor living conditions as opposed to personal problems?
You can't separate the two. You cannot separate war, daily war, from people's daily existence.
I agree.
I've seen war. And
good answer. I agree.
Right. Good answer.
Hello. We seem to have lost you a little bit, Fatna. Hello?
Did I answer that, or did you guys need me to answer? Continue.
Oh, no, I wanted, yeah, there's a question from Sam in New York City, and he, does the guest believe that he thought that at one point, Ramin had mentioned the term kafir, and does he believe that a Muslim, non-Muslim issue, and he was concerned about that.
I don't think Rami mentioned the word kafir. I mean, I don't know what he might have said in that.
I don't recall hearing anything like that either.
I'm sorry, but
which brings us to a really good question. Is there a Muslim, non-Muslim issue? I know that the majority of the Afghans are Muslim. And
okay, so to explain a little bit about the ethnicity and cultural, religious demographics of Afghanistan, the majority of Afghanistan, yes, they're Muslims, but we do have a small population of Hindus and Sikhs, and I would say, well, we have Shias and Sunnis within the Muslim demographic. Shias are a large minority. The Sunnis are the majority, but Shias are a large minority. There has been ethnic differences in the past, but there's never been a war. What's going on right now in Afghanistan is really sad. This is completely like something that's new to us in the last 10, 20 years of war, where different ethnic groups are fighting each other and killing each other, and there's been, I would say, even like genocides from one side done to the other side, but all of that is funded by our neighbor countries and foreign countries. If you ask ordinary poor Afghans, they don't care about Shia or Sunni or Hindu. I mean, the Hindus are a very small minority. It's foreign countries. It's the powerful elite that are funding these kinds of animosities and hatreds. It didn't exist to this level before. I'm not saying it was non-existent, but it's kind of like what happened in Iraq after, you know, the U.S. went in and then we had all these Shia Sunni massacres going on, right? Like, so that's kind of when Afghanistan, too, it's being funded by a foreign element.
May I ask you, do you see any relationship between the rest of the Middle East and what's happening in Afghanistan? For example, Palestine, Pakistan, and the animosity going on there?
Yeah, I do. I mean, if you look at it, there's a history of American imperialism going on. There's a history of colonization going on. In the case of Palestine, I mean, I'm probably going to get profiled after this one, but I got to say it.
Oh, don't worry about it, honey. I'm Palestinian, so you can say anything you want.
Okay, well, as we all know, the United States has always funded Israel, the state of Israel, and the state of Israel is committing massive human rights crimes and violating UN laws, and, you know, it's been ongoing since World War II or even before, right? So we all know that. So, I mean, there's a hand there definitely that's involved, and that's the U.S. government. And then, you know, I'm sorry, what other country? Pakistan. Pakistan is very interesting, okay? Like, you have the Pakistani military and their intelligence, the ISI, which is completely funded by the United States, by the CIA for a long time. Just recently, was it October or November, the United States gave another $2 billion in military aid to Pakistan, a country which just had one of the worst floods in modern human times. 3/4 of their country was underwater. And instead of giving them economic help, instead of giving them education, health care, what does the U.S. do? $2 billion in military aid. And where does this money end up? It ends up in funding terrorism. It ends up in funding, quote-unquote, Taliban. We wanted to get into the whole Taliban issue, too. We don't like using that word because Taliban is a very vague term now. It kind of puts everybody into one blanket, right? There is the ideological Taliban that are funded and supported by Pakistan, but then there's also the Taliban, the villagers that are simply tired of, you know, they're not able to feed their families. On one hand, they have a corrupt Afghan government that's been imposed on them by foreign countries with the help of foreign countries, full of warlords. And then the other hand, they have, you know, the U.S. coming and bombing their villages. So they're resisting. They're picking up arms. And they're much more susceptible to being recruited by the first kind of Taliban, which is the ideological kind of Taliban. So anyways, I'm rushing through these topics. But
There is a lot. Unfortunately, I think part of the translation process took up a lot of our
Having said all that, I want to make one point clear. While on one hand we oppose the actions of the Pakistani military and ISI and the corrupt Pakistani government, we do not support a war with Pakistan. And similarly with Iran, we do not support a war with Iran, even though Iran right now has banned the fuel, and we want the issues with Pakistan, Iran, and Afghanistan to be solved diplomatically. We do not support the U.S. going into these other countries, just like our country, and bombing them and sending drone attacks. What's going on in the regions in Pakistan is completely unacceptable. That does not get rid of terrorism. That creates more terrorism.
Well, thank you very much. On that note, I'm afraid we're all out of time, ladies and gentlemen. Fatma Mojadidi, and you can go to AfghansForPeace.org and find out more about this worthy cause. Thank you, Fatma, for being with us tonight. Please thank Ramin. And we will be back in just a minute. Thank you very much.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us. But for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes. All are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to earthshare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Hello, everyone. I have with me Mohammed Kazez. Mohammed, how are you? It's a pleasure having you with us again this evening.
Hi, Basma. How are you? Thank you for having me again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We have some illustrious guests coming into the Dearborn area next weekend, and Mohammed would like to tell us all about it. George Galloway is going to be in town, I see.
Yep, George Galloway and Shadi Mansour and Sound of Reason. And, of course, you know, the main speaker is George Galloway, which has been supporting the cause of Palestine for a long time.
We're very excited
to have him.
He is a good friend of the Palestinian people and the Palestinian cause. Can you tell us in detail exactly where this program is going to be held, what time, and where they can call for tickets, Mohammed?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be at Greenfield Manor in Dearborn on Greenfield Road. It's going to be from 6 to 10 o'clock Saturday, January 22nd, which is about 3-4 days from now. You know, they could call me for tickets, or they could purchase their tickets at the door. Would you want me to announce my number right now, or?
You could do that. Wherever they can call for tickets, that would be great.
Okay. My phone number is 313-585-1739. They could call anytime, or they could even call the hall. Anytime they could email me if they'd like at kazaz84@hotmail.com. That's kazaz84@hotmail.com.
That's great. Now that's Dearborn, Michigan, folks. Don't be going to some other Dearborn anywhere else. Besides, there's only one Dearborn, Michigan. Viva Palestina. Viva Palestina is the organization that is going to be the recipient of this, the fundraising for this event. And Muhammad, you are the event coordinator. Bravo to you. Good luck with your event. I hope that it is a great success. I have been telling everybody about it, and please, anybody that's listening to our program in the Dearborn area or wants to fly in or do whatever it is that you want to do to get there, please do it. It's a worthy cause and a worthy speaker and high caliber event. Thank you very much, Muhammad.
Thank you, Bethel.
And ladies,
thank you.
You're welcome. You have a great evening. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That's it for The People Speak. And here, when the people speak, we make a difference.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of summer people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.